But Pure Pine Woods beef is really good, and it's like eating history. I mean, you're eating something that, you know, these, they're listed on, you know, there's breeds of livestock that are rare, breeds of livestock that are endangered, breeds of livestock that are extinct.
Eating
and Pine Woods cows are certainly in
like
the
tall
endangered
order, but down
category.
In Waverly, Georgia, one farmer is making it his mission to bring the past into the present, one rare breed cow and one lo-fi garlic bulb at a time. Today, we're heading deep into Camden County to meet a man who traded a history degree for a tractor and a bulldozer. This is a story about grit, grease, and the glory of good dirt.
I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand.
I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast, presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. To get to grassroots farms, you gotta head way down to the southeast corner of the state. We're talking 30 minutes from Jekyll Island, tucked away in the pine-scented sticks of Waverly. And it's here, I met Brandon.
Brandon Chonko, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, C-H-O-N-K-O, Grassroots Farms, Waverly, Georgia.
All right.
31565.
Brandon, where did you grow up and how did you end up here?
I grew up in DeKalb County in Metro Atlanta in Stone Mountain. I got into agriculture. I have a history degree, and I mean, what do you do with a history degree? So I got out of school. I happened to get a job at a wholesale nursery landscaping. I got really into plants. This is back in like 2006, 2007. I got really into plants, and from there the economy crashed. And then I thought, you know, I like to grow stuff.
Now, going from the Atlanta suburbs of Stone Mountain to 31 acres of scrubby South Georgia woods wasn't exactly a smooth transition. When Brandon first pulled onto this property, there was no fence, no power, and definitely no house. It was just him, a chainsaw, and a lot of overwhelming silence. And in that silence, he quickly realized he was not the only one in these woods.
But see, we have bears here, we have Florida panthers, we have coyotes, we have bobcats, right?
That's a lot of predators.
Yes, and when you push, when this was more frontier, and I would try to push hens to the outskirts of this place.
Yeah,
they would get decimated. And so, eventually,
Florida panthers in Georgia, it's enough to make any new farmer rethink their career choice. In those early days, the sheer scale of the frontier and the predators waiting in the shadows led to a unique coping mechanism.
In the beginning, we would come in down here. It was all just scrub, and you'd come in and get so depressed being here, just like it's so overwhelming. Because the place in Reedsville was rented 30 acres, but it was cleared. It had been a farm for a long time. This was, you were like the first person that was put in the farm, like, you know, the first guy. And it was so overwhelming to be here. I remember pulling in and driving in, and it was so scrubby and nasty, and there was nothing. There was no fence. There was no water, power, and nothing. And I'd get so depressed, I'd be like, you know, I'd take a sad nap in the truck, and like, what am I doing, you know? And it took...
The sad nap. We've all been there, Brandon. But, you know, Brandon didn't stay asleep for long. He started clearing the land by hand, or rather, by pig. At Grassroots Farms, the animals aren't just the product, they're the workforce. Brandon uses a lo-fi approach, ranging hogs and cattle to do the clearing and fertilizing for him.
It's just a psychological barrier. Obviously, the pig, if he had the wherewithal to get shocked one time, he could get out and he could flee and never come to Grassroots Farms ever again, right? But they get, this is where they eat, and then psychologically, they've touched this as young. If you saw the baby pigs, you saw that the sows, they'll learn this from the mom. This electric fence is, you know, and they'll touch it. Invariably, they're going to touch it. If you touch that with a wet nose and your feet on the ground, it's going to pop you. It's not enough to, like, hurt you permanently, and it pulses. It's not a steady current, but it's really popping pretty hot. Has to be for pigs. But by doing this, I can move them. So this is the second time since 2000, the second time since 2016 that I've had hogs on this particular patch where these guys are right now. But that's what I do, is I'll move them, you know, and that's the beauty of the electric fence system. And so they'll root it all up. When I first put them here, it looked like that right there behind you. It's exactly what it looked like. And you come in, you put the fence around it, and then you put these guys in here. And once you put them in here, they start rooting. I feed them, but they start rooting it up.
The history is everywhere here. From the old stagecoach road that runs nearby to the heritage livestock Brandon keeps, like his Pinewoods cattle. These are the descendants of the feral cows the Spanish brought over hundreds of years ago. They're smaller, hardier, and they look like they belong in a 1700s landscape painting.
You know, they have horns, they're protective, but they're not, they're still capable of, you know, goring you. But I like the fact that they're small like that, and I love the history. Like Bartram, when that whole Bartram thing, the Bartram Trail, he wrote, when he came through North Camden, when he came through down the road, he wrote about going, and he's talking about right here, right on the Satilla River, he has a passage that says huge herds of horned cows, and then he talks about gopher turtles, and he talks about pine trees. And that's what North Camden, you know, historically was.
And then there are the goats. And every farm needs a little chaos. And Brandon's goats, which he traded some hogs for, are the definition of mischievous.
Come out, put the goats out. Within the same day, come back out here, the goats are gone. There's only four of them.
Yeah.
I'm like, golly. So the goats are gone. So I text, you know, people, my neighbors, and I'm like, if you see some goats... Well, the woman way down there texts me later in the day. She's like, I got your goats in my yard. So I go down there, get the goats, come back, arrange this little cattle panel pen, you know, put them in there. And then, so now I got to train the goats on this electric fence. But truthfully, I just got the goats because I thought it would be interesting to have the goats. I thought my kids would enjoy them. And then goats will eat some things that the cows won't. So I thought that would be good too. You know, the goats could also graze with the cows.
And is it the milk you're getting from them?
I don't get any milk. You could with the goats. The interesting thing with the goats, when I'm used to pigs and cows, the really interesting thing to me is what I like about them is that they're smaller and they're in a way more gentle than a pig. So they're not delicate, they're hardy, but they're a little bit more, you know, and see, that's what they do. They've done this once before.
They're mischievous.
Yes, and they got out one time. They're fun, but I can see why people say that they're sort of a pain.
But are they're just for the kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think you could eventually sell baby goats at the auction. They usually get a pretty good price.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the idea of just having something that, you know, you just have, you know, just to not slaughter or anything.
Yeah.
But they're funny because when they get out, if they get out of that fence, they don't like get out and like a cow, if they get out, they'll kind of hang around. They'll just be right out. If those cows got out, it's not like they would leave.
Yeah.
The goats, it was almost like they got out and they just started walking and eating and they just kept going. Like there was no thought of like, where did we come from?
Here at Grassroots Farms, Brandon has found that the best fertilizer isn't in a bag at the hardware store. It's found right under a cow's tail. Now, some people might look at a cow patty and see a mess, right? Well, Brandon sees black gold. He calls it farming the dirt.
So you don't get new dirt without manure. You have to have it, and that's how dirt gets rich. So manure, you can think of it in terms of like, oh, gross, like human terms, or you can think of it in terms of animal term. This is just cow manure. They've eaten grass, and now they, when I range them and I can and I move them, they come into a place where there's going to be garlic grown. They're depositing their manure back, and they change the structure of the soil every time I do that. So if I do it once, cool, that made the soil a little bit better. But imagine if I do it a few times a year for 6 years. You go from a dirt that, you know, will only support the brambles and the, you know, the weeds that grow in poor soil, to a dirt that when I plant garlic in here, I don't add fertilizer. I don't even add organic fertilizer. I add no fertilizer at all. No pesticides. It's really, really healthy. So then you graze cows, you graze chickens, and then when you plow this up, I'll plow it up in a few weeks. To do the garlic, it's just black dirt, man. It's beautiful dirt.
But as we were walking through the field, I noticed these strange little chimneys of mud popping up everywhere.
Crawfish mound?
Yep. So if you were to dig down this hole here, they probably, crawdads can go, I think, up to 5 or 6 feet under the ground.
Is there water down there?
What happens is they'll go in the ground and be dormant. And then when it pours and it floods, they'll come out and then they'll breed and stuff.
There are hundreds of these mounds scattered across the farm. And for a guy who loves to experiment, it's not hard to dream about a different kind of harvest.
There used to be a crawfish farm, believe it or not, in Woodbine, which is right down the road. And you'll see them here. You'll see them in the ditch when they come out. I thought for a minute that we should do crawfish. You know, that was like the dream, the super dreamer in me, you know, because we have a creek and you could flood it and do the paddocks and whatnot. But you can see, I mean, there's tons of them.
Brandon is always pushing the limits of what this South Georgia dirt can do. And that dirt supports some pretty unique crops, like enchileo garlic and something called rabbit tobacco. It's an old folk remedy that looks like a weed, but smells like memories.
But rabbit tobacco is a, you know, a weed, quote unquote, that it's an old folk remedy for respiratory issues and digestion. You can make teas out of it. You can smoke it. A lot of people in the country grew up smoking rabbit tobacco, or you'll hear of people's grandmothers smoking rabbit tobacco. It is a good smoke. It tastes good, and it's medicinal.
But the real test of Brandon's dedication to this land came one December when a record-setting freeze threatened his young citrus orchard. It was 15 degrees, cold enough to kill a tender satsuma tree in a heartbeat. And that's when Brandon decided to get desperate.
I was out here at night with a headlamp on. It was in the 50s, but it was supposed to be down to 18 the following night. And I'm out here digging them up, dig all 100 back up, stack them in some sort of trailer and put a heater on them. It was one of those, like, you know, this is either brilliant or completely stupid, but you got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, you got to try at least.
He dug up 100 trees by hand, moved them to a trailer, and replanted them when the frost passed. He only lost 3. It's that kind of hands-on grit that really defines life here.
We got a fighting chance, don't we,
baby? That's right. They're looking good.
The big thing is you dug them up, you put them back in the ground, and here you are almost a year later, and they're still alive.
But even with all that hard-earned wisdom, there's one resident on the farm that Brandon just can't seem to get through to. The dadgum chickens.
There's a lot of funny things about a chicken, about the mind of a chicken, why they choose. That some of them love to lay. Not all of these boxes will have eggs in them. Some boxes will have a bunch of eggs, and then some boxes never have an egg. Like this box here, for example, never has eggs in it. I don't know why. It's like the mind of a chicken.
Yeah.
But the funniest thing to me about them is they see me every day. Every day I get their eggs, every single day. And every day for them, as I'm getting the eggs in the morning, it's as if this has never happened before. And I'm always thinking,
it's a daily dance of surprise and pandemonium as Brandon tries to collect the eggs from 400 hens who apparently have the memory of a goldfish, or worse.
We do this dance every single day, but we get these really, really great eggs. Every day I do the same exact thing, and every day, Every day I'm grabbing your eggs, and every day you're acting like you've never seen me before. You know, you're jumping, they're jumping out. It's crazy, it's pandemonium. I'm pulling them out, and I'm like, we did that.
Walking around this farm, you see a man who has learned to work with the land, the weather, and even the forgetful chickens. It's a family legacy from the old trailer that belonged to Brandon's late father, football coach from DeKalb County, to the Satsumas he hopes his daughter will pick 50 years from now.
And then they're gone. The Satsumas are something that's permanent. And I love that I like the idea of things here that can be permanent. The cows, the fact that their genetics could be something that my kids could have that same genetic, you know, after I'm dead. You know, that, oh, well, these are the same Piney Woods cows that my dad had here in 2023. And here it is all these years later, and it's the same generations down, you know. Same with the Satsumas, that they, you know, 50 years from now could come out and say, I remember being a child and picking these with my dad. And it's like it's a way that, because it's a consuming job. So it's something that I feel like I can give them some idea of permanence here, you know, that I remember how this changed, and I remember what happened here, and I remember doing this, and, you know, stuff like that. So, growing memories, man. You know? Not just growing food.
Whether he's dodging Florida panthers, watching crawfish chimneys rise from the mud, or trying to convince the chickens that they know him, Brandon Chonko is exactly where he's supposed to be, in the black dirt of Waverly, finding the beauty of the lo-fi life. For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the gpb.org website. That's where you'll be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Selsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road.